Father, I love you. I mean, you mean so much to me. I praise you with all of my heart. Your name endures forever, and your fame throughout the generations. God, I am in awe of you. I love you with all of my heart, all of my soul, and with all of my might. Like the psalmist said, whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing I desire besides you. I sing to you because you are highly exalted. In the morning, I lift my prayers to you. And at night, on my bed, I think of you. I say things like, you are my lamp, O Lord. You turn my darkness into light. And great is the Lord, most worthy of praise. You are feared over all other gods. I am faint with love, and earnestly I seek you. Until I am David, composing sonnets to my shepherd, and slaying giants with my courage. Until I am Abraham, willing to sacrifice whatever it is to please you. Until I am Moses, talking back and forth to you like two close friends. Because I belong to you. I don't just want to know you. I'm pursuing you. You have no idea how much I treasure you. You are beautiful to me. You have all of me. There is nothing I keep from you, because you are mine and I am yours. Undeniably, completely yours.
My child, what can I do with you? Your love is like the morning mist. It's abundant for a moment, and then it disappears. You seem eager to know my ways, as if you're able to do what is right, and yet you flatter yourself to the point that you can't even detect, much less hate your sin. I show you my word over and over again, but you treat it as undesirable. You offer up your sacrifices, but I'm not pleased with them. You build many altars for me, but you use them for sin. For your heart is far from me, and the fruit of your lips cannot cover the stains on your soul. My child, what can I do with you? You eat your fill, and then you forget about me. You are rebellious, unwilling to hear my instruction, using my grace as a license for sin. You practice cleaning the outside while everything inside is dead. You are like David. You covet and manipulate to get what your eyes crave. You are like Abraham. You try to do things your way instead of waiting for what I've planned. You are like Moses. You complain and insist that my decision isn't the best one. You say you love me, but do you know what real love is? It's when I meet you after every night of secret shame with a morning of new mercies. It's when the God of the heavens and earth shares his life with dust. It's when I pursue you in the desert and whisper tender things to you. It's when I hide you in the shadow of my wings. But my love is not soft, no. My love is ferocious. It claws away at the outer skin to get to the layers underneath. It refuses to rest until it uncovers every hidden part of you. My love is strong. It endured the heavy cross and crown of thorns to reconcile you to me. My love will pierce the strongest armor, cross the greatest divide, and eclipse your abundance of transgressions. For do you not know? Have you not heard? I am for you. And if you only knew how I long to be gracious to you. As soon as you call, how quickly do I come to your aid because I love you. When your sin abounds, my grace is even more. When your doubts rise, my assurance even higher. When your guilt weighs you down, my freedom lifts you up. When you run from me, my presence is always there. I don't just want you to know me. I am pursuing you. You have no idea how much I treasure you. I have every hair of your head numbered. Your name is written on the palm of my hand. I died for you to know how much I love you. And more than anything, I want you to know my love for you. You are mine, and I am yours. Undeniably, completely yours.
So today, yeah, thanks guys. You guys are a little crazy, but I love you, and even if you're in the back row. So to the Angus was just waving at me. So today we're going to get started with a single question, but it's going to set the stage for the whole talk today. And so I need you to be honest with yourselves for this question. I'm not going to make you answer to anyone else, but I want you to kind of take this seriously. So my question, simple to say, is just, why are you here at Maywood today? So if we think about it a little bit deeper, are you here because, you know, your life's been a mess and you wanted to change, so you're here to try to change? Are you here because you come every Sunday and you're a creature of habit, and so your alarm went off and you did the things you do and somehow you're here at a pew? Or did someone at another church make you mad, and so then you came here? Or all sorts of reasons. Maybe you're trying to impress somebody else, or someone else would nag you so much if you weren't here that you'll just come. There's a lot of people in the room right now. We probably have a lot of different individual reasons why we're here. But I bet I could get the majority of us, a majority of our reasons boiled down to one purpose. And it's, Brian gave maybe the best answer, that we love Jesus. But actually, this one's not going to sound so positive, but stick with me. We probably did it for a lot of the reasons we do most of what we do. And that's, most of us want to get something out of everything that we do. We go to the Royals game because we want to have fun. We go to Walmart because we want to get bananas or whatever. We go places to get stuff for ourselves. We hang out with someone so we feel good. We listen to something so we learn something new that can help us. Most of the actions an average person takes in a day, even coming to church, it's about what can I get? What can I receive out of this? And that's not totally bad. A lot of people come to Jesus and have a great relationship with Jesus because they start with, Jesus, I need your help. Jesus, I need your help is a great way to start a relationship with Jesus. But if this is all you have is give me, give me, give me, then you don't have a full relationship. And so the series that we're in today, it's called Open Hands, an Experiment in Lent. Every week we're trying some new experiment, because Lent's a time traditionally where Christians give up something in order to open up to God in a new way. And so every week we're challenging you guys to experiment with, let go of something, even if it's okay, an okay thing. Let go of it for a little while to make space for something new. And so today I want you to totally unplug, totally turn off part of your brain that normally is maybe working the most. And it's this part of your brain. And I found the grossest picture of the word selfish I could find, because I want you to have this image when you have a selfish thought for the next 30 minutes or so that we're in this room. So what if we just did this experiment where for 30 minutes we weren't concerned about what I can get? We weren't concerned about how I need to change. We weren't concerned about what God can do for me or what someone else can do for me. What if we just did a little experiment where we weren't at all focused on ourselves? You might be saying, well, if I'm not going to focus on myself, what am I going to focus on? And we're in a place called a worship center. And so this word, I think, is a good thing for us to focus on today. What if for 30 minutes we just said, I'm just going to focus about giving worship to God. I'm not going to focus on what God can give me or what I can get fixed. I'm just going to see what would happen if I gave a little chunk of time totally to God. And so we're going to do this experiment today. I'm going to talk to us a little bit about Jesus' words on worship. But we're only going to talk for about 10 more minutes because then we're going to get a chance to actually do some worship together. And this week, as you go throughout your week, maybe you can do the same experiment again of I'm going to let go of something selfish, something about meeting my own needs, and I'm going to give a little bit of time just to worship God. So the passage we're going to be looking at in the Bible is Luke chapter 4, and we've been looking at it throughout this series. Right before Jesus started preaching and doing miracles, he spent a special amount of time out in the wilderness, and he let go of food for a little while. He stopped eating, but the Bible tells us that while he was fasting, he was full of the Holy Spirit. So he let go of something so he could be full of God. But also while he was out in the desert, Satan came and tempted him. And so we're going to be talking today about part of this temptation. So if we pick up in verse 5 of chapter 4, it says, the devil led Jesus up to a high place and showed him in an instant all the kingdoms of the world. Then verse 6, and Satan said to Jesus, I will give you all their authority and splendor. It has been given to me, and I can give it to anyone I want to. So here's the temptation for Jesus. Jesus came, his goal is to save the world, to save all of us. The temptation, Satan is saying, here's an easier path. You don't have to go to the cross and die and suffer. I'll give it to you. The fight's over, you know. I'll let you have the whole world, all the people here. I'll stop fighting for them. So what's the hook? Well, the hook on that bait is this. Satan says, if you worship me, it will all be yours. So Satan's been around for a long time, but he's of the philosophy, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. He's got this temptation kind of sales pitch, and he just keeps getting people with the same pitch. So the pitch here is he makes this big promise. I'll give you the whole world if you do something that you know you probably shouldn't do. Now, a lot of us, we're not trying to save the world, so Satan maybe doesn't give us this exact same pitch. But how many of us have bought into a lie of this big promise that this thing I'm doing will fill me up? But then we found out it wasn't true. This image right here, it's just one way that people buy into this lie. So drugs are a real clear example of this big promise that all this joy and happiness and pleasure is going to be yours and it's going to be easy to get it. But there's this shame that comes on the back end of that, and this remorse and all these broken relationships and poverty and problems that comes out of that, where we bought in to this bait of this is going to be pleasure and good and fun, and you wake up to find that your life's full, or not full, it's empty. There's shame and loneliness and brokenness. It's easy to look at this and think like, oh, but I'm not addicted to drugs right now, so this doesn't apply to me. This is just one example. We do this all sorts of ways in our life. We say, I'm going to go the easy road. I'm going to do something that people in this room might tell me not to do. I'm going to do it because it's going to be easier to get my needs met. I'm going to sleep around because that'll meet my physical needs. Or I'm going to go somewhere on the internet that I wouldn't go if I was sitting in the middle of church because it's going to meet my needs. Or I'm going to do this business deal and kind of take advantage of some people that don't quite know what's going on because I'm going to win. I'm going to get over on some people so I can get some financial success. Whatever it is for you, Satan keeps using that same sales pitch because people keep buying. People keep buying into, I'll do this little thing for Satan if I get the whole world. And so we got a smile on our face as we're signing off our life, you know. Jesus had a better way to go. Jesus's way wasn't to look at the temptation and say, like, oh, no, I don't really want that. He had something different. Here's what he said. He quoted a verse from Deuteronomy that he had memorized. Jesus answered, it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Dee talked about last week the difference between emotional love and devotional love. That emotional love, you feel these loving feelings, so you do nice things. But devotion comes when it doesn't feel easy and you still stick it out and do the right thing. And Dee found that he could grow in God if he had devotional love. If he would day in and day out do the things God told him to do, then he could grow, even when he didn't feel like it. Jesus is saying here, worship only God, serve him only. You see, addictions that we find ourselves in when we try to satisfy our needs on our own and say, I don't need God's help, I'm going to go the shortcut, that's a form of idolatry. That's a form of giving our worship to something else. To saying that God doesn't need that place in my life, I'm going to be devoted to this or that thing. Josh Monk used to talk to us about how when he was addicted to dope, like snow wouldn't keep him from getting dope, like rain, whatever. He'd walk wherever he had to go wherever he had to go to get the fix that he wanted. Why isn't he would challenge us about why aren't people that devoted to God? And so are you giving that place of ultimate importance in your life to God? So the interesting thing about this verse here where he says worship God and serve him only, the verse that he's quoting from Deuteronomy, sometimes instead of worship, it's translated as fear the Lord and serve him only. So fear is something we don't normally talk a lot about in our society as a good thing. We normally think fear is a bad thing. But in Hebrew, in the Hebrew language, when they're talking about fearing God, they're talking about having a healthy level of respect for power or authority. So I wanted to give you a little example from my own life from this morning, actually, about a healthy amount of fear. So I put this thing on this morning. I was wearing a different outfit, but I still looked pretty nerdy. So I had this thing on. The reason I had this on is because I was riding a bicycle this morning to get here to church. And there's a lot of these things running around Independence. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but so they're everywhere. So even when you're on little roads. So the thing is, I know a little bit about physics, not a lot, but I remember one physics formula, and that's force equals weight times acceleration. So my force on my little bike, you know, is about 160 pounds or whatever going 10 or 15 miles an hour. A car goes, you know, two or three times that speed when it's on the roads I'm on, and it weighs at least 20 times what I weigh. So a car's got about 60 times the amount of force that I've got. I mean, you don't want to get into a fight with someone that's got twice the amount of force that you've got, much less someone that's got 60 times the amount of force. So I have a buddy of mine who got hit by a car, and it was really terrible. I mean, if you see somebody that's really been tore up by a car, then you have this healthy fear of, like, I'm willing to put on some nerdy stuff because I know that I don't want to get hit by a car. It's not this fear of, like, I sit in my bed and have nightmares about cars or something, but it's just this idea of, like, a healthy respect of that thing's way bigger than me. It's way stronger than me. I don't want to get into a fight with it. I don't want to hit it. I passed a guy on Winter Road the other night, and it was, like, 10 o'clock at night, and he had no, I don't think any reflectors. He didn't have anything goofy like this. He didn't have any lights. He had no fear of cars. It was dark, and he's riding a bicycle in the middle of the road. And that's because he has no fear of cars. So fear can be a healthy thing. And when we think about our relationship with God, God has a lot more than 60 times our force, okay? God's a lot bigger than we are, a lot smarter than we are, a lot holier than we are. And a lot of people have this fallacy in their head, but it messes up their life. They know some truth about God, that God loves them, but then they take it a little step away and think, God's really nice. because he's always forgiving and always loving. And then they won't say this one, but they live this way. They live like God's a pushover. They live like I can just walk all over God and do whatever I want to do and treat him like trash. And then with my lips, talk about how great he is. The thing is, if you think you can just walk all over God and not have anything come of that, like you're like the guy riding down the winter road in pitch black dark with no lights. Like, it's a foolish thing to do. You're going to get hit at some point. And when you get hit, it's going to be nasty. I'm not saying that God's this God with lightning bolts trying to hurt you. What I'm saying, though, is we need to have a healthy respect for him. That worship starts when we say, like, God, you're bigger and better than me. It's not where it ends. God wants to have a loving relationship. The Bible tells us that perfect love drives out all fear. That when we're really mature Christians, it'll just be love for God. But the beginning of wisdom for us is with that fear of realizing, like, God's bigger and better, and I need to respect him because of that. So Jesus said, worship God and serve him only. If I can get this clicker back. A.W. Tozer, a guy that Patrick Wines, one of our Sunday school teachers and youth pastor, likes to read about. He's taught a class on him. He has this quote, "We must never rest until everything inside of us worships God." So our experiment that we're going to do here in just a second is to say we're going to have a worship time, a time when we're singing. But normally at the end of our service, we do a response time. And it's all about, you know, I'm always pushing, what are you going to do this week in your life? It's all kind of you focused. Today we're going to do an experiment. What would it be like to worship God and not be expecting anything in return? Not be looking for some revelation, not be looking for some peace, not be looking for some healing. What if it was just, God, you're great, and I just want to focus on how great you are right now? It's not the whole of a worship experience, but what if we experimented with that today? There was a church in England that Matt Redman went to when he was younger, and their pastor also liked to do experiments. And they did an experiment in their church that made Matt think differently about worship. And it made him write a song about worship, but it also made him realize that worship's about bringing something real to God. And so we're going to watch a short video where Matt kind of explains that song that he wrote. And then we're going to have the worship team sing. But instead of having people up front ready to pray for your response, it's just going to be a time for you to praise God. You can come down here and kneel at the front if you want to kneel before God, if you want to stand and sing where you're at, however you want to just focus on God in this time. Now, if you're going through a huge emergency and there's a crisis, you know, Bob will be back there. I'll be back in the back over here. We can pray with you if there is a crisis in your life. But if you can, let's focus just on God in this time. Instead of having open hands and saying, God, help me, help me, help me. And this time, let's just have open hands and say, God, you are wonderful. God, I want to worship you and serve you only.